This is the Power of Genetics podcast. In each episode, I'll be interviewing successful practitioners and impactful thought leaders in the world of health and performance. They will share their journey, their insights, and their best advice for us all. I'm your host, Dr. Yael Jaffe. Let's begin with today's episode. I'd like to welcome our very special guest today. We have Dr. Teresa Hapkova, who will be joining me on the Power of Genetics podcast. So a big warm welcome, Teresa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I met you quite some time ago. Probably 6 years ago, I'm going to guess, when you were working as an integrative doctor at Canyon Ranch in Lenox. And I believe I was there for like a couple of hours trying to convince Canyon Ranch why, in fact, it was before 3x4 Genetics. It didn't exist yet. And I remember you guys saying to me, so which test should we use? And I was like, well, you know, I don't really have a good test to recommend. And they're like, well, if you ever build a test, please let us know, you know? So I think that's when we met. And obviously we've stayed in touch and we've been working together for the last many years, really, since 3x4 launched in the US. So a big warm welcome to you. I am, on a personal level, very excited to get to talk to you because we're always talking work. And so I never get the opportunity of really hearing from you how you landed up to be this functional, integrative, amazing doctor. And I believe you started as internal medicine and kind of really... And I'm going to stop talking and hand it over to you, but I just also want to say, like, I remember a couple of years ago listening to you giving a presentation about what we say is herbs in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And you, I think you say is herbs without the H, and just realized how like the breadth and depth and of your knowledge was so much more than I knew. So that's my intro to you, but now I'm going to hand it over to you and I would love to hear where it all began for you.
So I grew up in a communist Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia back then, and I really wanted to be a journalist. I wanted to kind of uncover the truth and I wanted to do maybe documentary movies and explore and unveil, but my family was not really friendly to communist regime, so that was completely out of the question for me to study journalism or documentary movie. So I had to go to a school that I could go to and where they cared more about your grades than about the political background. And that's really how I ended up at medical school. That was it. Plus, I really wanted to avoid mathematics at all costs. So that was the other reason. So I ended up in medical school and I started liking it. I really started liking it. And what was also amazing, first year of medical school was 1989. I experienced the Velvet Revolution. Communism broke down. I was in the streets of Prague, you know, basically helping to break down communism. And I was always a rebel, I guess. Always wanted to challenge authority, wanted to challenge regimes that didn't work or authorities that don't work. And I still carry that with me. I still challenge authorities. And it has gotten me to some troubles, but it also shaped the way that I practice medicine. When I was in medical school, one of the things that influenced me probably the most was when we started studying pharmacology in the fourth year, and our professor said, the only difference between medication and poison is the dose. And that sentence just stuck with me so much. That really shaped how I practice medicine. I've been always so careful that I don't give people medication unnecessarily, or that I give it if I need to for the shortest time. And I always really want to get to the root cause of their disease, address that, maximize the opportunity through healthy lifestyle, through more natural, safer options. And the medication for me is the last ditch, so to speak.
Okay, I'm going to go back a bit. So did you grow up in Prague?
No, I grew up in Liberec, which is about an hour north of Prague.
Oh, okay.
But I lived in Prague for 6 years. Mm-hmm.
One of my most beautiful cities, no doubt. Yeah. One of the most beautiful cities. And I went there before, obviously after the revolution, but I went there before there were ATMs and McDonald's. So I was lucky enough to go there before it became so commercialized. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. So you did your studies in what is now Czech Republic, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And When did you move over to the US? I mean, when did that happen?
Yeah, so I finished my medical school, and at that point, communism broke down, borders were open, and I was so hungry to explore how people lived in other countries. I was so curious because we didn't have the opportunity to really go anywhere when we lived behind the Iron Curtain. So I looked into actually moving to South Africa, all the countries that really? Spoke English.
Are you serious?
England, Australia, and with the US, it was the most clear. It was like, if you do, you know, A, B, C, you can come to the US. So I followed the steps. I had to have my medical school recognized. I had to do the United States medical licensing exam. I had to go to Budapest for that because they didn't do it in Prague. Then I basically looked on the map of the United States because we didn't even have computer back then. I looked on the map where it kind of looked nice. And that's where I sent applications for residency. So that's how I ended up in Framingham, Massachusetts. And it was a lovely, wonderful, wonderful residency.
It was an excellent choice. Well done. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was that was a good one. So you landed up there and that's where you did your residency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved it. I loved the internet, you know, with learning so much. It was just so energetic and I loved it. But I always like to explore things a little bit differently. And one of the days, our secretary said, Teresa, do you know about Andrew Weil? He has a fellowship in Arizona in integrative medicine. And I didn't actually know who he was back then.
I'm sure.
So I looked him up and I looked at the fellowship and I was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I want to do. This is what I want to do. And so I applied for the fellowship and they invited me for an interview, which was amazing. That was a third year of existence of that fellowship. And I think they only had four fellows a year.
Oh, wow.
And I went there for an interview and that was already just so amazing. I fell in love with Arizona and the whole program. I didn't get in, but I knew Well, I knew that this was the way that I wanted to practice medicine. So that was kind of my dream that I followed ever since then. But I had to get my green card. So I had to, you know, apply for jobs that no Americans wanted to do. That's how you get a green card.
And yes, I know. I'm in the middle of the application myself. I know it very well. Luckily, yeah. I did get to do my dream job. So tell me, so you landed up working as a primary care physician, right?
I was a primary care doc for 6 years. So that's how I kind of earned my green card. Then I was a hospitalist for a few years. And all along I was looking, well, how can I do something more integrative? How can I get back to this dream that I had? I was doing different educational conferences on my own. Jeff Bland, that's when I kind of came across Jeff Bland. I started learning about herbs and clinical hypnosis. And herbalism, I was learning whatever I could. I was always like a sponge, you know, soaking whatever information I could learn that could help my patients. But then I was frustrated I couldn't put it in practice because when you are a primary care physician and you see 30, 40 patients a day, and even when I was a hospitalist, I still saw 16, 18 patients a day. You really don't have time for that. It was very, very far and in between where I was able to carve some time to do something integrative. I was always trying to do that and bring it to the hospital and bring music therapy to the hospital and this and that, but it was really hard. So I was lucky that in Massachusetts, Canyon Ranch existed and I knew of them. I read the book, Ultra Prevention by Dr. Hyman and Dr. Liponis. And all of a sudden I heard that they are looking for another doctor. I applied. They interviewed me, then I didn't hear from them for about a year. So I thought that was it. And then all of a sudden I got a phone call. Congratulations, we decided to take you. And
what year did you start working at Canyon Ranch? When was that?
June 2008. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I was there for over 10 years.
You were there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw a couple of amazing doctors pass through. That is amazing. I mean, you were really there from when they started building out. I mean, that was a really pivotal time for Canyon Ranch.
Mm-hmm. It was an amazing experience. Canyon Ranch. Yeah. No, it was an amazing experience. I mean, I learned so much there working along with amazing practitioners besides the doctors, you know, nutritionists and exercise physiologists and acupuncturists, massage therapists. We interacted all the time and talked about our patients, how we can best help them together as a team. And that was really very valuable learning experience for me.
And I got to meet you there. And definitely, and I mean, there are worse places to live. I mean, it's so beautiful in that area. So you also had a very beautiful place to live, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, oh, yeah. It was like being on vacation all the time. Yeah.
Okay. So
I never thought I would leave. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe.
I also couldn't believe you would leave. I was like, what? You're leaving Canyon Ranch? So let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You leave Canyon Ranch. I know there were lots of changes happening there. You weren't the only one.
Things were happening, and I felt like I was ready to start something on my own, and not on my own in terms of my own practice, but I learned about Advent Health seeking a medical director to basically help them open an integrative medical center in Kansas City. And as crazy as it sounded like a really great opportunity to build something from scratch and use everything I learned. So I applied, I got the job, and we moved to Kansas City. Yeah, and that was 3.5 years ago.
Three and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very different experience working in a huge institution like Canyon Ranch, which has been around forever and has so much staff and everything, to the challenge of establishing a integrative center, which is already outside of the way that things work. And by yourself. So what were some of the greatest challenges you had in doing that?
I think, you know, being accepted by the physicians, I had to be very careful. It's still a little bit more conservative here. And I was always very careful that whatever I say is really backed up by evidence. And that's been my whole life. I've been always super careful that everything I say is really evidence-based. But kind of pushing the envelope, pushing something new. and promoting prevention and getting to the root cause of disease rather than just putting band-aids in the shape of medications. So I had to convince my colleagues here that this is something worth exploring. And I have succeeded with that. I have a lot of referrals from, you know, cardiologists, immunologists, allergy doctor, ENT, GI people. I mean, it's been lovely. And primary care physicians, of course. So that has worked very nicely. One thing that I was hoping to accomplish is make it more affordable for everybody. One thing about functional medicine and integrative medicine is that it's not covered by insurance. It can be quite costly. And I was trying to find ways how to make it more affordable. And that's when I came across James Muskell, his books and his podcast. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this makes so much sense. Group visits. So I started piloting group visits for weight loss and for GI issues. And it was really amazing to see how people interact, how they basically serve as each other's buddies and help each other accomplish their goals and learn from each other. And I am a big fan of group visits. And then I had an idea, wow, could we do group visits for genetics? And we'll talk about that, I guess, a little bit later.
Well, we can talk about it now. So actually, you know, when I never forget hearing James Muskell speak, he was in South Africa and he was right at the beginning of talking about, you know, the value of using group visits as a way to not only to bring down the cost of care, but also to improve outcomes, as you say. And I was like, wow, this is absolutely brilliant. And then I signed up for his course. Him and Tom Blue were offering a course on group visits, which I think Tom did most of the lecturing. Mm-hmm. But I was like very excited about it. And it's been interesting because when you came to us and you said, you know, we're going to use your 3x4 genetic test in a group visit, we were so excited because we've been wanting that to happen for so long. And we know quite a few practitioners who've been trying, and yet you've had great success. So tell us what you did.
Well, again, I just piloted it. It was a little scary. It was a little intimidating for sure. But I was like, well, let's invite some of the patients who already had genetic tests and let's just see if it's possible to educate them a little bit more deeply in groups. And we separated the educational part into 6 sections. And we pair the education with hands-on cooking and cooking demos now. Everybody still gets one-on-one session. So we do 2 one-on-one sessions. So people still get the personalized attention, and we want to always look at the genes in the context of their health and what's happening with them. But a lot of the education actually can be done in group, because for instance, we talk about the cellular pathways, about inflammation, detoxification, oxidative stress, methylation. So I explain the concepts and really try to encourage them to think, what in your life could be causing inflammation? Now that you learned what could be the possible triggers, what in your life could be causing oxidative stress, especially if you see from your genetic report that maybe that's your weak spot? Are you experiencing symptoms that could be from that? So I kind of try to encourage them to start thinking that way, and really found out that people became kind of like detectives along with me, and they try to figure out the story of their own health with my help in these group visits. And then we brought it to a very basic level, put the information to the plate, so to speak, as my nutritionist and chef Lisa Markley always says, let's bring it to the plate. And we cooked together delicious meals that were easy to make and spoke to the different pathways. Now we are transitioning to doing more demo style, so we can reach even wider audience. Hands-on cooking, you know, we could only had maybe 8 to 12 people in the kitchen supervised, yeah, so they don't cut their fingers off. But with demo, we can have 20, 25 people. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been great.
It sounds like it's been a wonderful experience and a great success as well. And as I say, I think it's the different components that you put together. I love that it's got cooking in, you know, genes as the kind of story of who they are. And then, you know, I've reached out to my team quite a few times, like, you have to talk to Teresa. Like, this is an amazing story. Okay. I want to go back to Teresa the Revolutionary, because it sounds like you and I were having very similar experiences, me in South Africa. I was just a couple of years behind you when I was being tear gassed and thrown off campus. And,
oh, wow.
You know, it was the end of apartheid. You know, the end of the 80s was the end of apartheid. Yeah. When you were breaking down the wall, we were trying to get rid of that. And so I'm interested about this personality, because I was the same thing. My parents sent me overseas to university to get me out of South Africa because they were so worried I was going to land up in prison. And it seems like there's a personality type that will challenge the status quo. So what do you think it is, your greatest personality strengths that have enabled you to keep on looking for better ways to do things, for doing group care, for bringing genetics in, for learning about this? I mean, you sound like you just have learned everything in the space. So self-driven. What do you think it is? And how do you reach out to other people and tell them like what it is that you can share with them about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am not sure exactly where it's coming from, you know, if that's genetic, this desire to be digging for truth. But of course, under communism, we knew that we were fed propaganda every single day. We knew that we were listening to radio with my parents, the voice of Europe, voice of America. So we knew things were different that the government was telling us. And later, when the borders opened and I came to the US, I was like, wow. I mean, with the whole pharmaceutical industry, it's the same exact thing. They are feeding us what they want us to believe. They want us to be prescribing their medications. And so they will not tell the truth. They will hide the 50% of studies that maybe showed no effect. And they will just publish the one or two studies that showed what they wanted us to see. And so I really started to see a lot of the similarities. And it drove me crazy that a lot of other doctors don't see that even today. There are still a lot of physicians who don't realize that even many of the top medical journals are really kind of publishing what the pharmaceutical industry wants them to publish. They fund many of the studies. That has been really bothering me a lot. How can we open eyes of other physicians? How can we open eyes of the public? And look really for a better solution.
So what do you think your next revolution is? I mean, you've still got a lot of years ahead of you to change things and find things. Like, where do you think Where do you think we're going to go with the future of medicine and with your, you know, ability to challenge and create and envision? Where do you think we're going to go in the next 10 years?
I am hoping that people, that lay audience is actually realizing they want something different. It's going to come as a grassroots movement from people. They want to be treated differently. They want more natural approach. They are realizing that food is important, that lifestyle is important. And so I really think the future is hopefully going to be going back to our healthy lifestyle, whole foods, away from artificial ingredients, away from processed foods, away from hopefully antibiotics and hormones in food. And that we will try to go to root cause and always understand why did things happen. And can we actually prevent disease instead of just managing disease with medications? Can we instead prevent it or can we reverse it? And I think it's possible. I think it's definitely possible to do a lot more in prevention and disease reversal rather than just putting band-aids on people. And I think a lot of people are realizing it as well. So I think that we are in the beginning of this movement that is going to be a grassroots movement. And it's going to completely revolutionize medicine. And we'll be looking back at this age of Frankenfood, you know, and Pharmageddon, hopefully in a few years, and we'll be like, oh my goodness, what were we doing? What were we thinking? But I'm hoping that that's where things will go.
Well, I mean, if you think 10 years ago, if someone said to you that you could prevent, delay, or reverse Alzheimer's, or even diabetes. Right. I mean, you would have looked at them as though they're crazy. And now, you know, I did a podcast with Dr. Dale Bredesen and he was incredible. And he was like, you know, Alzheimer's is a choice. Yeah. And I was like, you can prevent it. Yeah. You can delay it. You can reverse it. And you know, if I said that 2 years ago, I think, well, probably he was saying it 2 years ago, but there's such a shift. And even now the concept of aging like has evolved, you know, it's not just the realm of the kind of ones out there, the biohackers and everything. It's actually really become part of our conversation. That I had a brilliant conversation the other day that I love. I was talking about like, we all need to be prepared to live to 100 because the reality is a lot of us are going to live to 100 just with good nutrition and exercise and stress management and a better environment. We may also, you know, what does that look like? So I do think we're in a very interesting time where integrative functional lifestyle medicine is starting to permeate our conversation. And we don't actually have to prove to anyone that nutrition is important, which I spent the first like 20 years trying to do, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like spreading it into the masses. But I think no one argues. They may not do it, but they don't argue that nutrition is important or that exercise is important.
Mm-hmm.
So my next question for you, Teresa, is, so many, you know, students coming out of grad school, in grad school or qualified, and not only as MDs, but any health professional, what is the advice that you would give them as they kind of heading into the beginning of the career?
I was thinking about how I might answer this question because it's not an easy one for me to answer. I think you have to lead by example and see how you feel when you yourself lead a healthy lifestyle and when you yourself are in a healthy environment and see how it affects you. I think a lot of patients, a lot of physicians who got into this type of medicine experienced some kind of health crisis themselves and realized that traditional medicine didn't have all the answers and they started looking elsewhere. But there will be a lot of students who hopefully will be healthy and they will not have to go through crisis to discover integrative medicine and functional medicine. So I think it's just keeping your mind open to other possibilities. Never believe that there is no other solution to any problem because there always are more solutions. You may just not have discovered it yet, or maybe you didn't come across the right person who has the solution. But there are always so many options out there to learn about. So just keep being curious. Things are not finished. We are still learning so much. And the whole field of microbiome is another exciting field to explore. And it's really inspiring to see how things are connecting now. We are learning about environment and how we have to take care of it if we want to be healthy, and how we need to sleep, and we have to do something about the levels of stress that we have accepted as norm in this country. So I think just go in all those directions, see what speaks to you the most, and lead by example.
Oh, I think that's beautifully said. And I think there is so much more learning to do. As I said, you know, we talk about planetary health is human health, and yet, you know, we can't hide from it. And if you think about how reductionist our studies were when we first began, and now understanding that, you know, we need to take into account the planet, you know, so, you know, social genomics is so exciting. It's one of my favorite areas. You know, there's just the food system, the pharmaceutical system. I think it's going to be an interesting time. So in some ways you are a journalist in many ways, because you are uncovering and you do write and you do teach. And so, I mean, it's just investigative journalism in a medical nutritional health space, really. It's not that far off.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
What would you say now if I offered you an alternative to medicine? Do you think you would have made any other decisions? Do you ever regret that you became a doctor?
It's definitely not an easy path, right, to be a doctor. For many years, it feels like a sentence, especially when you are still in the residency and you don't get enough sleep and you always have your beeper on. And I think that hopefully will change as well, or has started to change, because it's not a good way to create new doctors by basically abusing them. Yeah. It's not an easy path, but I don't regret it. I definitely don't regret it. Would I have gone a different direction? Maybe documentary movies, maybe journalism. But maybe I would be writing about health anyways, and making documentary movies about health and healing. So
and making documentaries about what's happening in the health environment. I mean, it's as I say, it's not a very far leap from what you're doing now anyway. So, you know, I'm excited.
I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's, and I, you know, I'm always watching what work you're doing, and I'm always following you to see, because I really do see you as very courageous, very brave. Very authentic in terms of being true to the work and true to your patients. So, you know, I love working with you, and I'm very excited to see what happens in the years ahead. I have no doubt that you'll be part of whatever movement health and nutrition takes in the future.
Thank you, Yael. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I am ready to spread my wings and see how I can soar and help as many people as possible.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Teresa Hapkova. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing your story. And hopefully we will get to see you soon in person.
Thank you so much. It was lovely being here, and I look forward to seeing you in person as well.
Thank you for listening to the Power of Genetics podcast, brought to you by 3x4 Genetics. For more episodes, please visit 3x4genetics.com/podcasts.